Beis Amid Beis, which is page, oh, here it just goes Beis Amid Beis. Yeah. Three lines from the bottom of the page.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to get quarter
of what? Okay. Open the Gemara now.
Did I just finish? I have very few left in the
book.
Oh, it says in Talmud Bavli. Does that mean that Yerushalmi has Makis too?
There is a Makis in Talmud Yerushalmi, but it says Talmud Bavli because it's Talmud Bavli. No, leave it. Just leave it there. Okay. Mishum Rabbi Kiva Amru. Three lines at the bottom. They said before, this is not in the Mishnah, but Rabbi Kiva said that Edom Zaymimin, if they admit their guilt in Beis Din before witnesses made them Edom Zaymimin, the din is they don't pay the knas, they don't pay the fine. Meaning, if Edom Zaymimin, remember, Edom Zaymimin again is those witnesses that testified that something happened on Tuesday morning, another group of witnesses said, how can you say what you said when you were with us in Hawaii? Okay. So now, Rabbi Kiva said that if Edom Zaymimin admit their own guilt before they're caught, meaning, firstly testify in Beis Din that Reuven killed Shimon or monetary, whatever, that something happened on Tuesday morning. Then later, the witnesses themselves come and they say, by the way, we're liars because we weren't there in Los Angeles, we're in Hawaii, Mamela, we're liars. So Rabbi Kiva said, they don't pay the fine. They don't pay the amount of payment of Edom Zaymimin. One second. So the Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Kiva. What's Rabbi Kiva's reason that Edom Zaymimin don't pay their own Hazama? So he says, Kesavir, because they hold, Rabbi Kiva holds, Knasahu, that Edom Zaymimin is a fine, a Knas. Uh-huh. It's not a monetary obligation, it's a fine. And knas a mishalim al pi atzmi. And the halacha is, you never pay a fine on your own admission. Give you an example. If a ganav steals, he pays double. When does he pay double? If he's caught. Mm-hmm. But if a ganav on his own comes to Beis Din and admits the crime before he's caught, he doesn't pay the knas. Okay? So Rabbi Kiva holds, Edom Zaymimin is not a monetary obligation, it is a fine. And if the witnesses come themselves and admit their guilt in Beis Din, they don't have to pay the fine. So Amr Rabbi says, Teda, I'll prove it to you, that Edom Zaymimin is a fine and not a monetary obligation. Why? Because Edom Zaymimin didn't really do anything, right? V'nehadogim and Misham, yet they get killed and they have to pay. Meaning as follows. If Edom Zaymimin, let's speak a monetary case. If Edom Zaymimin say, we saw Reuven land Shimon $1,000 Monday morning. Okay, that's what we saw. In LA. Two other witnesses come and say, you're liars, because Monday morning you were with us in Hawaii. Now, they're disproven. That means the loan never took place. So reality, realistically speaking, did they make Shimon pay Reuven the $1,000? No. They wanted to make Reuven pay, she get $1,000 from Shimon. Because what did they say? We saw a loan a Monday morning in LA. That means what did they want to say? Shimon owes Reuven $1,000. The fact is though, they never made him pay the $1,000. Because they became disqualified. Right, they became Edom Zaymimin. Yet the Torah says they wanted Shimon to pay $1,000, so they have to pay the $1,000.
Who did they pay to?
Huh?
Who did they pay to?
To the court.
Mm-hmm. No, they paid. Huh?
Very smart.
What? Who gets the money? To the person they wanted to make him pay. Mm-hmm. Now. So what happened over here? They never obligated Shimon to pay the $1,000 because they were caught before. Yet, they have to pay money. So it's not a monetary damage. What is it? It's a fine. So Rabbi says, that's what Rabbi Kiva says, if they admitted it before, if they admitted it before, by the way, I have to take, I'm not sure who they pay the money to. It could be they pay it to Beis Din.
What if the guy really owes the money $1,000?
But it's not true. There's no proof of it.
He'll find another proof.
Oh, if he gets another, but it has nothing to do with them. Oh. It has nothing to do, as far as they're concerned, they did not obligate a guy for money, and yet the Torah says you got to pay money. That's not a monetary obligation.
But it's a fine. So if it's a fine, why should it go to Reuben? Or
who should it go to?
It should go to the court. Yes. I mean, he did something that was wrong, so he's fine because of his daughter. You're not paying now.
Maybe the money should go because they insulted him. They made him. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember. So therefore, Rabbi says, he just explained where Rabbi Kiva says, Adam Zayman, that admit their guilt on their own, don't have to pay it because it's a fine. How do we know it's a fine? Because they have to pay something they didn't even obligate the guy to pay because they were disqualified. Amir Rav Nachman says, which basically is similar to what Rabbi said, Amir Rav Nachman says, Tate, I'll prove it to you. Why? Shaymam and Biyad Bailim, the money is still in Shimon's hands, and yet they have to pay. It's similar to what Rabbi said. Okay? In fact, the Gemara is going to ask what's the difference between Rabbi and Rav Nachman. They're basically saying the same thing. Shimon didn't pay money, and they're still obligating the witnesses to pay. So the Gemara asks, my binayu, what's the difference? The Gemara said, my Nino, what does it mean? Why didn't Shimon lose the money? They didn't do any action. So the Gemara says, "Hainu the Rabba." So that's exactly what Rabbi said. Why is Rav Nachman bringing a different proof than Rabbi if it's exact same proof that Shimon didn't pay money and yet the witnesses have to pay? So the Gemara says, "You're right." Don't say it's like Rav Nachman bringing a different proof than Rabbi. Rabbi brings a proof. V'chein Amir Rav Nachman, and so Rav Nachman says also that there's a proof. Then the Gemara says another thing. Amir Rav Yudah Amir Rav. Rav Yudah says in the name of Rav, Eid Zaymim Mishalim Lefi Chalkei. Eid Zaymim pays percentage. What does it mean he pays percentage? A very simple dip. Well, the Gemara doesn't know yet what it means. But the Gemara thought that if, let's say, A and B testified that they saw Reuven lend Shimon in Monday morning in L.A. Two other witnesses come and say, A, we don't know about, but B was with us. So A was never disqualified. Because who did they say was with us in Hawaii? Yes. B. So now, there's only one witness. So the Gemara thought now, what Rav Yehuda Merav is saying, that if one guy becomes disqualified, as Adam Zayman, what happens?
The case is dismissed, yeah, sure.
No, but does this one witness pay anything?
Ah, that's something else.
So he's saying he pays his portion, meaning half. Let's say they wanted to obligate Shimon to pay $1,000 to Reuven, and then A or B becomes disqualified, not A. So together they would have obligated Shimon to pay $1,000, they would have to pay $1,000. But now that there's only B became disqualified, B would have to pay $500.
So we need two witnesses for a purchase ticket?
Yes, you need two witnesses, don't you? If B is disqualified, then A is automatically disqualified.
Why? He's one witness.
But you need two.
One witness could prove?
Well, in today's Rambam, in the midst of the Rambam today, the Rambam says, the Torah says, one witness cannot extract money, but he can make you swear. That means, if we're two witnesses, and we say together that you owe him $1,000. So two witnesses say, so you owe him the money. No document, doesn't matter if there's documents, no documents. Two witnesses say it goes. Okay? If us two say, and we're kosher, let's say, we're kosher witnesses, and we testify you owe him $1,000, so you have to pay the $1,000. What happens if one witness, me, comes and say you owe him $1,000? So what's halacha? I cannot extract money, but I can make you swear a biblical oath. This is one of the three biblical shvuas of the Torah. I can make you swear that you don't owe him money. And if you swear you don't owe him the money, then you're off. But if you can't swear,
then, I will,
then you have to pay him $1,000.
If the guy who claims,
what?
Without a witness, can you make somebody swear?
A rabbinic oath. For instance, if I come to him, come to Reb Chaim over here, and I say, Rabbi Chaim, you owe me $1,000. He says, I don't owe you a cent. Go fly a kite. And we go to Bez. So basically, he's denying everything. So the din is, he has to swear a rabbinic oath. It's rabbinic, not from the Torah. And it's called Shvuas Hesis. So rabbinic Shvua, that he doesn't owe me anything, and then he's off the hook. But he has to swear a midrabbanan. But if there's a biblical shvua, if there's a biblical shvua, how? If one witness comes and says he owes me the money, so then he has to swear a biblical shvua. And if he can't,
then I have to pray.
I'll give you an example. I bring one witness that you owe me $1,000, and you say, you know what? I don't remember. Now, if I have two witnesses that you owe me $1,000, there's no question. You pay me $1,000. If you say you don't know, tough luck. I mean, even if you say no, it doesn't matter. But what happens if I bring one witness that you owe me $1,000, and you say, I honestly don't remember? Now, you can't swear, because you have to swear against the testimony of the witness. The witness says, you owe me the money. That means your oath has to be against the witness. You have to say, no, I don't. You can't say, no, you don't, because you don't know. So you can't swear.
Because you can't swear,
I don't know. That's ridiculous. Yes. So the terrorist says, then you have to pay me. But it's not the witness extracting the money. The witness is forcing you to swear. If you can't swear, the Torah says you have to pay. Now, that's one biblical shavua. There's another example that's not in the game right now in the Gemara, but it's time to know. What happens if I say to you, you owe me $1,000? And you say to me, no, I owe you $500. So you are what's called meida b'miksus. You're admitting half, and half doesn't mean exactly half. I can say, you owe me $1,000, you say, no, I owe you $100. You made the b'mixus, you admit part, you have to swear a biblical oath that you don't owe the rest.
Without a witness or with a witness?
No witnesses. I come to him, I say, you owe me $1,000. Uh-huh. I have no proof. There's no document. If you have a document, you have a document.
Yeah.
No document, no witnesses. I say to him, in Bezdin, you owe me $1,000. And he says, I owe you $500. So he has to pay me the $500 that you admit, and then you have to swear that you don't owe me more.
$500.
It's called Meida B'miksus. That's also, by the way, a shvua of the Torah. It's also a biblical shvua. What?
When you give the case of when you lend him money, and you say he owes you $1,000, he says, I owe you nothing, so he's chayav to swear.
Right. Midrabanan.
Yeah, and if he can't...
What do you mean, Rabban?
It's a shvua that the Chachamim instituted. Biblically, you don't swear.
I learned in a mafke that if you're kai frakal, you're pater.
Pater from the Torah. To swear. The Gemara over there is speaking about Minat Torah. In fact, over there, if I'm not mistaken, Tesis asks, but he has to swear shvuas hesis.
What's the difference? I don't understand.
Well, when you go on jury duty.
What's the difference?
Either way, it's a swear.
No, there's a difference of the style of the shvua.
The style.
When it became a biblical shvua, they made the room spooky. They darkened the room, they made it spooky, and they tell the guy, I want you to know before you swear.
Did you
say the Torah? Yeah, they tell the guy, I want you to know that when God said, don't swear falsely, you know, in the Sefer Dibros, the world trembled, and this is a serious business, and blah, 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 whole thing. But shvua d'rabban, they don't do that.
But don't you have to swear in front of the Torah?
Yeah, it's similar, but it's not the same stringency of the shvua.
People still do this?
Huh?
People still do this?
Now, one second. By a rabbinic shvua, if you can't swear, then I have to swear and take.
Uh-huh.
For instance, what happens, God forbid, I don't mean you, what happens if you are a known liar that swears falsely, and therefore Bezdin doesn't trust you? Right? Bezdin's not going to trust you to swear because they know. So what do? So the Gemara says, you know what's going to happen? It's a big problem. Every guy will come over to a known liar and say, you owe me money. He's not going to be able to swear, right? And people will rip him off. So Chacham said, keep it cool. What you're going to do is, if he can't swear, normally you never swear biblically and take. All the biblical shvuas, you swear and you get out of payment. Like, for instance, the witness says, you owe me the money. You swear, I don't, and you don't pay. Made them a mixus, you say, I owe you 1,000, you say, I owe you 500. I mean, you owe me 1,000, you say, I owe you 500. So you pay the 500, you admit, and you swear on the other 500, and you don't pay. Okay, normally, on a biblical shvuas, you don't. Now, there's another interesting story in the Gemara, where two people swear, because the guy himself can't swear. For instance, it's called Chameni al Pinkos. It's a very cute case. I owe you money. You worked for me. And I owe you $1,000. Salary. I tell you, the Gemara calls you the storekeeper, the banker, the Chameni. I come to you and say, do me a favor, give him $1,000 and I'll pay you. Lay out the money, give him the money and I'll pay you the $1,000. You come to me later and say, you know what? You owe me $1,000. I never got the money. I come to you. You say, what do you mean? I gave him the money. And you're coming to me now for the $1,000. So you're coming to me for $1,000 salary. You're coming to me now for the $1,000 that you gave him. Now the Torah says, I can't swear to get out of payment. Why? Because I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Right? How am I supposed to know if you gave him the money? But I know I owe you the money. If you gave him the money, I owe you the money. So what do? So the Gemara says a strange din. You swear that you never got the money. You swear you gave him the money and I have to pay both of you $1,000. Because what else can we do?
How come you believe one person more than the other?
Who are we believing?
You believe the two people rather than the one who owes the money.
I don't know. It's not a question of not believing me. I don't know. Do I know if he gave you the money?
So why is he punished more than the others?
There's no other alternative over here.
Don't pay them.
What do you mean don't pay them? I owe you the money for sure.
Maybe he gave it to him.
Huh? Then I owe him the money.
Maybe he didn't.
So then I owe you the money.
But we don't know.
So right, Bezdin doesn't...
Why does he get punished?
He's not punished.
What if a third person comes to you?
Next time, don't do that.
Exactly.
What if the third person comes to you and says, I'll pay him $1,000, and you'll pay me back?
No.
You don't come to me.
But you said you'll do it.
I come to you. I said I'll do it.
No. And I agreed.
And you agreed.
So that's the same thing?
Yes, give him a slap.
But if it happens that way, we can be in cahoots.
Right, but you're not going to swear falsely. That the chachamim we're not afraid of. See, the fact that you have to swear...
Yeah, because you have to swear.
Because you have to swear, so that the chachamim we're not afraid to that extent that they're really going to, you know, swear.
Rabbi,
how could both of them... How could you believe...
Huh?
You're not supposed to swear and you got jury duty, right?
Right.
Say a
right.
Well, but they do say they either swear or affirm.
He swears he never got paid.
Either one or the other.
Right.
I swear I paid him.
Right.
Somebody's not telling the truth.
Correct.
You swear or affirm.
No.
But we have no choice.
I haven't
been
to jury duty
lately.
I want to know.
They don't.
There's another case in the Gemara, same thing. You two guys give me money to watch. One of you gives me $100 to watch, and the other one gives me $200 to watch. Okay? And I don't remember who gave me the money. I don't remember who gave me what. You come along to me and say, I was the one that gave you the $200. You were the one that said, I gave you the $200. I know one of you gave me $100, one of you gave me $200. Right? And I don't remember, so what's the din?
You can both swear and then give them both
200. No. So the Chachamim hold, a very interesting din. I pay each one 100, and the third 100 is put away until Aliyah Navi comes. Aliyah Navi will tell me who's a liar. Rabbi Yaisi says, no, you can't do that. Because the liar is not losing anything.
Right.
The liar is getting his 100 anyway.
Yes.
So Rabbi Yaisi says, put away the whole money until Aliyah Navi comes. Mm. Nobody gets a cent. Why? You're going to force somebody to admit the truth. It's like the famous story we told, we were learning but a long time with Bar Metzia. There was a guy who found a wallet in the street with $500. Is it so in the shtetl? He found this wallet with $500. He saw a name inside. He was an honest guy. He wasn't a real Jew. He was an honest guy. And he gave back, he found out who the owner was, and he gave him back the wallet. The owner takes a look at the wallet. He sees his $500 there. And he says, he thinks to himself, I can make a quick buck over here. He starts screaming at the guy, you're a ganef, there was $1,000 in the wallet, and you're giving me back 500, you're a thief! And he starts yelling. The guy says, if I would be a thief, I wouldn't give anything back. Obviously, I'm an honest guy. No, and he's, the guy's, you thief, let's go to Bezin. They go to the Rav. And each one says to the story. And the Rav understands that the finder is honest, because yeah. If he's a ganef, he would take it off.
Yeah.
But the Rav was a smart guy. He says to both of them, listen, you both look like honest people to me. I believe you, and I believe you. I believe that you lost a wallet with $1,000. And I believe you that you found a wallet with $500. It's obvious it's not the wallet that you lost. Because you're both honest. You lost the wallet with $1,000. You found the wallet with $500. It's not your wallet, push it. So there's no fight over here. So the guy saw that he was out the bucks. So the Rav outsmarted the guys. He said, I'm sorry, yeah, it's my wallet. So
the Rav told me the guy who found the wallet could keep the 500.
No.
Well, Rabbi, isn't that Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom with the mother and two kids?
Yeah.
One kid and two mothers?
Yeah, to cut the kid in half.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same type of wisdom.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a mother-in-law one with that. You know the story?
No, God!
Oh, I gotta tell you this one. There was a story, two boys in a shtetl heard, they were looking for a shidduch, two boys. And they heard in another shtetl, there's two girls. So they thought, great. The two boys will go to the shtetl and marry the two girls. Along the way, one of the boys never died. So now one boy comes to find the shidduch of two girls. So each girl, the girls are waiting for the boys.
Yes.
So now the two callers are fighting. It's my chosen.
Yes.
It's my chosen.
Yes.
So the mothers got involved. And the mother said, no, this is my chosen. And the mother-in-law says, no, it's my chosen. So they went to the Rav. So the Rav said, Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom, he said, I have a good idea. There's one boy for two girls, cut him in half. So one mother says, yeah, cut him in half. And the other one says, no, don't cut him in half. So the rabbi said, the one that said cut him in half, that's the real mother-in-law. That's the real mother-in-law, says cut him in half. It's the opposite of Shlomo HaMelech.
The wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't tell this to your mother-in-law, by the way. Okay. Now the Gemara says, okay, let's get back to it. We'll get off a little bit. Second, let's start again. Second line from the top. That an Eidzeimim pays his part, which means, Yaakov, you got it?
Uh-huh.
He did, because you don't know what a mother-in-law is. Okay. So simply the Gemara thought it meant now that if one of the Edom Zeimim had become Edom Zeimimin, so they pay half. That's what the Gemara thought. So the Gemara says, my Mishalim lift me fi chalkei. What do you want to say? Oh, so the Gemara didn't even think that now. The Gemara thought Edom Zeimim Mishalim lift me fi chalkei means that each one pays half. I jumped the gun really when I started explaining it. But the Gemara thought now, it meant as follows. If two Edom come and say Reuven owes Shimon $1,000, and they become Edom Zeimimim. So they wanted Reuven to pay the $1,000 to Shimon, right? So now you make the Edom pay, you make the witnesses pay, right? What do they pay? $1,000 each? So the Gemara says, no, you pay, each one pays $500, right? Together they wanted to make him pay $1,000, so now you pay, each one pays half. That's what the Gemara thought he meant. So the Gemara says, Ile medai mishalim palga. Vai mishalim palga, if you're going to say each one only pays half, that means from the $1,000 they wanted him to pay. So there's two witnesses, each one pays $500. Tanina, so we learned that already. Mishal shalim b'mamin, vai mishal shalim b'malkas. You divide the split the money when it comes to money, but not when it comes to Malkus. Meaning, it says in the Braisa, and this is relevant to our Mishnah, if two people, the Braisa says clearly, if two people wanted to make him pay, then you divide the money, each one. In our Mishnah, remember we said, if they say he's not a kosher coin, you don't make him that, you make him, give him Malkus. You lash him, 39 lashes. So each one gets 39 or each one gets half. So the Braisa says when it comes to Malkus, each one gets the whole Malkus. But money, each one pays half. So the Gemara is asking if Rav Yehuda Merav is telling me that Eid Zayman pays his part, meaning he pays 50%. We learned that in the Braisa. Money you could divide, but not Malkus. Alas, the Gemara says, no, this is a different case. Kagain, the Idzum Chadminai. One of them became Edom Zeimimim. The Mishal and Palga Didei, that he pays half of his. Okay? Like we started explaining. That if two Edom Zeimimim together wanted to make a guy pay $1,000, one became disqualified. So the din is, only one pays his half. So Gemara says to me, Mishal, but he doesn't pay. But Tanya, and this is the din, the Gemara refutes this, and Edom Zeimim Mishalim Mamin Achi Yizum Shnehim. Edom Zeimimim don't become disqualified to pay unless if they both became disqualified. It's a unit. Meaning as follows. If two witnesses say Reuven lent Shimon $1,000 Monday morning in LA, they want Shimon to pay Reuven $1,000. One of the witnesses became Edom Zeimimim. In other words, they came to A or B, like we said the case before, and they said, A, you testify, we don't know you. B, how can you testify together with A that you saw Monday morning in LA? Monday morning, B, you were with us in Hawaii. The Gemara says they don't become Edom Zeimimim. He becomes a posseledus. He becomes a proven liar. He's never allowed to testify again because he was caught by witnesses being a liar. But he doesn't pay Edom Zeimimim unless if both of them became disqualified. So the Gemara asks, how can you say Rav Yehuda Merav means that when does a witness pay his part? If only one of them became disqualified, he pays his half. There is no such thing. Because Edom Zeimimim to pay, you have to disqualify both of them, not one of them. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Be'emet speaking, that Eid is Sheker Adati. He says, I testified falsely. In other words, he said, one of the witnesses come, yes, like we said before, not that he was caught. No, he comes on his own and he says, I lied. But the Gemara is going to ask soon, but that's not like Rabbi Kiva said. Rabbi Kiva just said, it's a knasin if you admit, but we're not there yet. But the Gemara says, kol kaminei, he's still not believed, because there's an interesting halacha, kivin shehigid. Once a witness testifies, you can never change your testimony. Shuv ein echezer umagid. He's never believed to change his testimony. There's a din, and this is a din throughout Shas. If a guy says, I testified, he cannot alter his testimony in any way whatsoever. He's not believed.
That's perjury.
Huh?
That's perjury.
Right.
That's where they get this one, right? Legally.
A lot of things that come from Torah. Once you testified, you're not believed anymore to change your testimony. You're not. So how can a guy come to Bezdin and say, I lied? He's not believed to say, I lied. So again, where do you have a scenario where one of the two witnesses pay and not the other one? If one became disqualified, it's still worthless. Because they both have to become disqualified. So the Gemara says, Elba Eimer is speaking as follows. A different case. The guy comes and says, me and another person testified, we are found to be Edom Zemim in a different court. Okay? Now, once Bezdin obligated him to pay, it's a financial thing, it's not a fine anymore. Because Bezdin said, you have to pay. Now he comes to Bezdin and says, they ran away from Bezdin before they got... What are you looking at? They ran away from the Bezdin before they were, before the Bezdin forced them to pay, but Bezdin ruled that they have to pay. Now one of the two comes to Bezdin in a different city and says, you know what? Bezdin, Paskin, we have to pay money. And I'm here by myself. So that's what the Gemara thought. Rav Yudah Merav says, that's when the witness has to pay his half. Meaning both became Edom Zaymimin, but now one comes to a different city, and he's not admitting a fine because Bezdin already passed him that he has to pay. Think if a guy comes, we said before, Ganef pays double. See, if the Ganef admits before he's caught, he doesn't pay double. But if he's already caught, and Bezdin says pay double, and the guy runs away to another Bezdin, and says to another Bezdin, you know, Bezdin, that Bezdin made me pay the fine, then he has to pay.
Not testifying against yourself?
In monetary obligations, you can obligate yourself. In sins, you're not believed to say, I killed somebody.
If one Bezdin Paskin says you killed, and he goes to another one and said, they told me, or the Paskin I killed, it doesn't count?
No, unless if they find out from the Bezdin that they attack a Paskin like that.
But you can't just walk into another Bezdin and say it.
No. If a guy comes to Bezdin and says, hey Bezdin, guess what? I just ate pig, give me Malchus. You don't touch him. If a guy comes to Bezdin and says, I owe Yankel $1,000, Bezdin says, then you gotta pay. You're not believed to make yourself a Rasha, but you're allowed to obligate money. In fact, the only thing which is stronger than testimony of witnesses, and the Achreinim have a field day why, and there's a lot of logic behind it also. If I say, I owe you $100. I say to you, I owe you $100. And two witnesses say, no, you don't. They say, no, you don't. I still have to pay. Hoidaz Baldin, the admission of the litigant, of the person, is stronger than two witnesses. The Gemara's expression is like, Kameya Edom, it's like 100 witnesses. And the Poskim explain, it's not because I'm going against witnesses. I can obligate myself as a gift. You're telling me I don't? That doesn't mean I can't obligate myself to give you a gift. That's the only time a guy's... But that's only in monetary issues. If a guy comes to Bezdin and said, Bezdin, I just killed Yankel. Why don't you kill me? It's not believed. They say, go home and have a good sleep. If a guy comes to Bezdin and said, Bezdin, I just ate Chazer, give me Malchus. You don't do anything to him.
I just stole?
Nope. Because stealing is a sin. He's not believed to say that he stole.
What if he shows in the object that he said? That's the wallet.
So he's not believed to say he stole. So maybe the guy gave it to him to watch. A person is never believed to make himself a Russia. No, he's not believed to make himself a Russia. It goes even more. The Gemara says that he even split his testimony in half.
Yeah.
If a guy says, I committed adultery with so-and-so. He's not believed on himself, but he's one witness to testify that that person committed adultery. But not with him. Mm-hmm. He said they committed adultery with me. So the Gemara says, he cut his words in half. He committed adultery, he's believed. With me, he's not believed. Mm-hmm. Because with me, he's incriminating himself. You're not believed on yourself.
That's Minator. Torah says it clearly, right?
Huh?
Torah says it clearly.
The what?
In Chumash, doesn't it?
The what?
You're not believed. If somebody comes to like kill someone.
Torah doesn't say clearly.
Doesn't say?
No. A person can't testify against himself because he's related. This is the truth of the matter. You can never testify against yourself because you're related. And a relative is not a kosher witness.
Related to yourself.
It's one of the reasons why you're not allowed to testify.
What if you answer?
There's a Rashba in Ksubis. The Chassidim should know this. The Gemara says, "Ein adam meisim esatzmei rasha." A person is not believed to make himself a rasha. The Rashba adds, "Ein adam meisim esatzmei rasha leimer she'ein echassid." A person is not believed upon himself to make himself a rasha to say he's not a chassid. He doesn't mean over there the chassidim or misnagdim. But there's an expression in the Rashba: a person is not believed on himself to make himself a rasha to say he's not a chassid. If a person says, "I didn't go more than the halacha goes," you know, demands, he's not believed either. Anyway, so the Gemara asks a question: how could a guy come along and say that when I testify? He's speaking. One of the witnesses come and say we became Adam Zaymim in a different Bezdin, and that's it. So the Gemara says, "Command the lake Rabbi Kiva," but that can't be according to Rabbi Kiva. Why? Rabbi Kiva says that this is all kanas. So how could he be obligated to say if I became Eid Zaymim in a different city? He's not believed because he admitted his guilt. So the Gemara says, "You're right. What we mean is, and they made us pay money. Now they obligated us to pay the money. So now once Bezdin obligates you to pay money, it's not a fine anymore, it's a monetary obligation." So I would think, they can't obligate his friend like this. He can't obligate himself. So Rav Yehuda Merav says, in such a case, when an Eid Zaymim, one of the two, comes to a Bezdin in a different city, and says to the Bezdin, "Listen, me and my friend, we're Eidim Zaymim in a different city. And Bezdin Paskin, we have to pay. And I'm an honest guy. I'm coming to you to claim my guilt." So Bezdin says, "Yes, you have to pay half. You wanted to Bezdin obligated both of you to pay $1,000. So now you have to pay the half. Because you're one of the two." But in the case, the Gemara said, well, you would get Malkus, like in our Mishnah, each one gets the entire Malkus.
No such thing as
Adam Zaymimim, when they want to obligate money, each one pays half. If they want to kill somebody, you don't kill half of them. You kill them both. Okay? Malkus, they get it both, the whole thing. Money, they split between them. And by the way, if it's three witnesses, and they became Adam Zaymimim, so each one pays a third. Four, a quarter, I mean, whatever it is, each one pays a percentage. How much it is. Okay, the next Mishnah is a very interesting Mishnah. It's not hard, even though there's a lot of Rashi on the Gemara of the Mishnah. It's very simple logic. Let me explain this Mishnah first outside, and then we'll understand. We'll be able to understand it better inside. The din is, there's a concept called a ksuba. If you're married, you know there's a ksuba. What's a ksuba? A ksuba basically is that the husband writes to the wife in the document that if I die or divorce you, you get the value of the ksuba. For psula, it's $200 zuz. Okay, let's go with money. $200, let's say. What happens if the wife dies first? There's no ksuba. Right? There's no ksuba. What people used to do in the olden times, a woman, let's say, needed cash. They do this today in the secular world too, but not with a ksuba. A woman needs cash. So she comes to a business investor gambler. I mean, any investment is really gambling.
Pawn shop.
Huh? Pawn shop. And she says to the guy, "Listen, my husband might die first. I might die first. I'll sell you my ksuba for half the price. Give me $100 now. You keep the ksuba. If my husband dies, you'll collect the ksuba. If I die first, you'll get nothing. Okay? They used to do that. Another thing they used to do, the husband sometimes would sell the ksuba. What would the husband... I'm explaining now the Mishnah with the Gemara together to have a full picture of the, what's going on over here. Sometimes the husband would sell the ksuba. It's a commodities exchange. I mean, you sell futures, right? But you don't know what the future is going to be. The husband says to a guy, listen, there's a possibility I'll die first, and then my wife has to get the whole ksuba. There's a possibility she'll die first, and I won't have to pay anything. I'll sell you my ksuba. The husband says, I'll sell you my ksuba. In case I die, you'll have to pay the woman 200. If she dies, you won't have to pay anything. And I'll sell you the ksuba also for $100.
What is the guy buying gain?
Huh?
The guy buying...
What speculation.
When does he get any money? I
mean, if the husband dies, he's going to get the $200.
That was supposed to go to the wife?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. In that case, if he dies first, he'll have to pay the buyer, the broker, will have to pay the wife $200.
So when does the broker collect? In which situation?
If the husband dies first, then I'm sorry, if the wife dies first,
then
it's his.
But there's nothing there. The wife died already. Oh, now he has to pay the money to the guy.
He gives $100. But what is he... Oh, so you're asking a good question. What is he selling? The explanation he's selling as follows. The husband designated a piece of property for the ksuba. He says, this land is designated $200 to the ksuba. I want you to pay me for this land. You can now use the land. You can plant on it. You can do whatever you want with the land. If I die first, the land goes to the woman. If she dies first, you keep the land. Okay. Right? Okay? Now, which deal is better, the husband's or the wife's? The husband's deal is a better deal for the broker than the wife's deal. Because the wife's broker... right now is getting nothing. It's only speculation. If the husband dies, if she sells the ksuba, right? If the husband dies, he'll get $200. If she dies first, he gets nothing. What does he get now?
The land.
No, I'm saying when the wife sells.
He gets nothing.
Nothing.
Right now he gets nothing. The wife sells the ksuba to a broker, and she says, listen, my ksuba is worth technically $200, but only if my husband dies first. Then it's worth $200. If I die first, it's worth zero. So for the gamble, give me $100. Right now, this broker is getting nothing. Correct? When the husband sells the piece of land for the value of the ksuba, the guy is getting a piece of land now, which he could use now to plant, right? The only thing is, he might lose the land. If the husband dies, he has to give the land to the wife. If he dies first, he has to give the land to the wife. If the wife dies first, he got a $200 piece of land for $100, plus the usage. Right? So, who's going to charge more for the ksuba? For selling it. The husband is going to charge a bigger percent of the ksuba than if the wife does. Okay? You got this?
Yeah.
Okay. If you understand this, you understand the whole thing over here with the whole long rationing.
They already had a stock market back then, huh?
Huh?
They already had a stock market back then.
It wasn't a stock market. It was a gamble.
Just like a stock market, a futures market.
Oh, right. It's to a certain extent, it's a futures market.
Just how sick the husband is, how sick the wife is.
What happened...
Hopefully these are old people.
No.
Otherwise, again, we have to wait 50 years for it. The broker may die first.
So the heirs will get it. The Yorshim will get it. Now, what happened? Now let's take this is the setup of the Mishnah. Now, what happens? What happens if two Edom testify? Yaakov was married to Rachel. Yaakov and Rachel were married. Two witnesses come and testify that Yaakov divorced Rachel and didn't pay the ksuba. So what are they saying? That Yaakov owes Rachel $200 for the ksuba. He divorced her and didn't pay. Okay? Then the witnesses became Edom Zemimin. They became disqualified. So they have to pay what they wanted to obligate Yaakov to Rachel. Correct? So what the Mishnah says, they don't pay the whole $200. Because right now the ksub is not worth $200. Because Yaakov and Rachel Alaperil are not divorced because they're false witnesses. Right? So they're still married. What did the witnesses testify? That Yaakov divorced Rachel and he didn't pay the ksuba. That means, what are they saying? That on Monday morning we saw Yaakov divorce Rachel. Memela, he owes her $200. Then two other witnesses come and say, what do you mean you saw Yaakov divorce Rachel Monday morning in L.A.? Monday morning you were playing golf with us in Hawaii.
What does Rachel doesn't Rachel come and say, I'm not divorced?
Huh?
Doesn't Rachel come and say,
I'm not divorced? Believed?
She's not believed to say I'm married to my husband?
If a woman comes and says I'm divorced, you don't believe her.
So if two people come and say...
Unless she can prove it with a get. Unless she proves it with a get. Because then you have a document, like on the loan, that there's something happened.
So two witnesses could come and say this wife and husband are not married, and they're believed, and they're not married.
No! The two witnesses testify that they divorced. But then they became disqualified. That means they're still married.
Right.
Yaakov and Rachel are married, that's a fact.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Now, two witnesses come and say Yaakov divorced Rachel.
But they lie.
So if they don't disqualify them,
if they don't disqualify them, that means Rachel. Two witnesses testify on a divorce. Yes.
So even though the husband and wife say we're not divorced, the two witnesses win.
Yeah, two witnesses testify they're divorced.
They saw them divorced. They saw them.
Okay, maybe they change their mind to get back together again, but the brother have a din of a divorcee. Let me ask you a question. And then, let's say they get back to marry together, and then Yaakov dies. Can Rachel marry a Kohen? She's a divorcee. Two witnesses testify she's divorced. Right? Now, the two witnesses become disqualified. That means Yaakov and Rachel are still married. Mm-hmm. But what if they testify? That Yaakov owes Rachel $200. So the Mishnah is going to say the witnesses don't have to pay $200. Because right now, this ksuba is not worth $200. Why isn't it worth $200? Because you don't know who's going to die first.
But they wanted to make him pay $200.
So what? But it's not what he wanted to pay $200. Because right now, they say he owes her a ksuba.
It's $200.
No, it's not. The Mishnah is going to say it's worth what is the value of the ksuba now?
Basically, he's divorced and it's $200.
But the fact is... The fact is that this ksuba right now is not worth $200. Because if the wife dies first, it's worth zero.
It's worthless at that point.
It's worth zero. If the husband dies first, it's worth $200. But right now it's not worth $200. And the proof of it is, like we said before, if the woman or the man sell the ksuba, do they get the $200? If they sell it on speculation, do they get $200? No.
If they would have been disproven, the husband would have to pay $200.
The Mishnah is going to say the husband's not going to have to pay $200. The husband is going to have to pay how much the ksuba is worth now.
Depends if you believe they're divorced or not. You're going to believe the witnesses they're divorced and it's $200.
No, but that's not he says right now you have to pay the value. This is exactly what the Mishnah is saying. when the witnesses say you have to pay her the ksuba, right? And the fact is that they're married.
But they're saying they're not married.
They're saying they're not married. What is the value of the ksuba now? Is it worth $200?
We're saying they are married.
It's not, because Lapel, right now the ksuba is not, nobody's going to buy this ksuba for $200.
Okay.
They'll only buy it on speculation. So either on the wife's price or the husband's price. But the Mishnah doesn't discuss that, and the Gemara is going to ask, is it the wife's price or the husband's price? Because the husband can get more for the ksuba than the wife could. So let's see now inside the Mishnah. We testify, two witnesses testify, Reuven divorced Rachel. And he didn't give it a ksuba. And the end result is that whether today or tomorrow, he might have to pay the ksuba. Why? Because he might not have to pay it at all. So the ksuba now is not worth $200. And it's where, how much do the witnesses have to pay? It says, aim them kama adam reitzalitim b'ksuba shilzu. How much on speculation would a guy be willing to pay for a ksuba? Shim nisalma nisgasha. That if he becomes a widow or a divorcee, v'meisa, and then he would have to pay the full thing. V'meisa, and if she dies first, you know, shana baila, the husband will get it. Okay? Meaning, he'll also inherit the fields that she brought into the wedding. So the Gemara says, you won't have to pay the ksuba. Right? You're not going to have to pay the ksuba based on the total $200 value. How much a ksuba is worth for speculation? So the Gemara says, though, but Kate's a chamin. How does it work? Is it on the wife's price of the ksuba or the husband's price of the ksuba? And like we discussed before at great length, the husband's value is worth more for the ksuba than the wife's value. Because the husband's giving the guy a piece of land now that he can work. So Rav Chista says, Babal, and the husband's. Rav Nosim Barei Shiyayme B'isha, and the wife's price, which is cheaper. And, what's his name? Amir Rav Papa says, Beisha ubeksubasa. Meaning, he says, what it means is really, it's the wife's value of the ksuba. But not the land that she brought into the ksuba. Meaning, there's two types of land, it's late, but very briefly, there's Nichsi Tzein Barzel and Nichsi Milug. There's two types of properties a wife brings into a wedding. There's one type of property that's called Nichsi Tzein Barzel. Nichsi Tzein Barzel means iron sheep, meaning it's secure land. She brings it in. It's worth $1,000 when she brings in the land. That's what the husband has to give her back. Nichsi Milug means she brings field into the marriage. The husband, for the duration of the marriage, eats the fruits. The husband eats the fruits, but she holds on to the property. Now, if that's part of the ksuba money, that the din is, if the wife dies, who gets those fields? The husband.
The
husband inherits a wife. A wife doesn't inherit a husband. A husband inherits a wife. So if she brought fields into the marriage, which is mentioned in the ksuba, so who gets the fields if she dies?
He does.
Not the kids, you mean?
No. The husband inherits her. So then it's even a stronger value of the ksuba, if you can count the fields. Because a guy would speculate on the ksuba more so because there's a possibility of gaining those fields too. The speculator, the broker, not only is he giving the possible value of the ksuba, but he might even get the possible value of the lands too. So he's for sure going to pay a high price. But the Rabbi says, no, that's not counted in the ksuba. It's the woman's value of the ksuba, not the husband's, the woman's value of the ksuba, but only the actual ksuba, not the fields in the ksuba. just the 200 zuz of the ksuba. How much that's worth? So the mishnahs are basically, if the guys, if the witnesses are liars, but they want to obligate somebody to pay a ksuba, there's no $200 value of a ksuba. It's either, let's say, if the husband sells it, it might be worth 100 and a quarter. If the wife sells it, it might be worth, let's say, 100. Because the wife is giving over less speculation. Because it's now you get nothing. It's either who dies first. But if the husband sells it, it's speculation on higher value. So one opinion, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, you evaluate how much somebody's going to pay for the ksuba. The Gemara discusses, are we talking about the husband's value or the wife's value? So Rav Chista says the husband's. Rav Nasi bar Eshi says the woman. Rav Papa says the Isha, but only on the amount of the actual ksuba value, 200 zuz, not all the lands included.